when you were speaking about the importance of the network that you've developed, which has aided your performance and your career over the last 20 years plus. Would you say that the importance of that network has been around sharing of technical knowledge with people, or more about the networking element itself and the relationships?
It's a little bit of both. Of course, if you build enough trust, even if you're not working exactly on the same thing, but you can share something and help each other, so to speak. It's not in a legal way, of course, but it can happen. And then it's also important from also career perspective. At the end, you can share, look, I have this opportunity, what do you think? And because you trust people at the end, and you trust both on the technical side but also on the career side.
That's great. Cheers. Thank you. I was also really interested in the work that you did at Ital Design. Mm-hmm. And you talked about your exposure to really people at senior leadership level, perhaps in advance of what a typical engineer might have access to those kinds of people. And I don't want to put words into your mouth, but it feels like that shaped some of your future career and almost it at least accelerated your career, in the sense that you, probably from networking, but also from an understanding of the kinds of things that level of individual needed to understand and how to present and communicate with that community. Not all engineers will be fortunate enough to have exposure to that community. What advice could you give engineers who aren't able to quite have exposure to those sorts of people and leaders, to either to have more access or to somehow do other things which will help them on that journey?
Of course, this thing kind of happened to you, meaning I was dragged into meetings because that was my role, and I realized that there are companies which it's a lot less open, the environment, a lot more hierarchical, right? And you can only talk to this level because this level will talk to the next level, and so on. Unfortunately, it's true, and that's why I probably is one of the main reasons why I never choose an established OEM, because I know, talking again to the network, to the friends and ex-university colleagues and so on, that was the part that was more different, so to speak. And but is now that I kind of sit on the other side, of course I'm not a CEO, but I receive presentations, and I truly believe is one of the factors that change the perspective of an engineer. So if I have two engineers delivering presentation, one very sharp, very, to the point, very crisp in the communication and the facts and the numbers, and another that struggles even on a storyline, and at that point maybe they are equally good, but the first one has an edge. It's as simple as that. So I think, especially the way we work now, there is less and less isolated work into a CATIA station or CIE station. You will always have the chance and the need to present your work, and paying attention to how you present is definitely a winning factor later on in the selection of the next promotion or something like that. Definitely important. Yeah.
No, thanks very much. It's really interesting. And it kind of leads on to what sounded like a bit of a culture clash when you got to Chorus. You mentioned it around a small group who came from maybe consultancy backgrounds, similar perhaps to yourself, who'd seen a wide range of different type of engineering solutions and customers and actually solved those and created the solutions versus probably a larger group who was on the other end, who was potentially your customer and was really just checking that what you had created was right. The question is though, because you touched on it, but I just wonder how that culture grew and whether whether there was a lot of conflict or how that environment developed and whether it became more collaborative or whether there was always some conflict between the two groups. I wonder how that would have been quite an interesting
scenario. I think that was the main difference between Chorus and Neo. So in Chorus, that was the initial background. And it never really evolved too much into a truly cooperative and so on. So it stayed there. That part was never really solved. Mm. Was solved by authority and rules rather than by agreeing on a new methodology, agreeing on something that, okay, this makes sense. To say, we do like this because I have a higher position than you. All right, fair enough. But then don't ask me to, to bleed because of you. I will just do my job.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm a professional. But in Neo is completely different because from day one, the key role of William was to create a company. So we gather around these values of honesty, care, vision, and action, which initially we were saying, of course, we were all like, oh, we are here to make a car. Why we bother with the values in reality? And then I remember William was gave us at the time, I think we were already 200 to 300 people. He gave us a book about the founder of Starbucks. And then by reading this book, you understand that, okay, then it makes sense because even if the product is not right, but the company has is solid as values and so on, you stand a second chance. But if the product is not right and your company is it's not solid, then there is no second chance whatsoever. Mm. And actually, when Neo had this problem in financial problem in 2019, where the stock went to $1 and so on, and of course everybody was, they will not survive and so on. Actually, the user community was helping, and us, we all felt a sense of belonging. And even if the company was in trouble, actually, is statistically speaking, is one of the lowest, the period with the lowest turnover rate.
Right.
So people were actually staying because it's not the right time to leave. I don't feel right to leave because the company needs me. And there are very few companies that can say that, right? So that was a major difference. Mm. So it's important at the end to, again, if you work for a company that make you feel part of the solution, part of the success, and then you want to be part of the solution also when the company is in problem, is in trouble, right? Not just when everything is going
it's
wonderfully.
Easy when things are going well, right?
Exactly.
Importance of culture. That's really good takeaway. That thank you. you've answered this already, but I was interested to ask it in a slightly different way. You mentioned that you don't have people leadership responsibilities as such anymore. So my question was engineer first or leader first, but you've kind of answered it. But then you did also go on to talk about. Legacy and the importance of mentoring and helping develop the next generation and you progressing, but equally those that you're supporting and helping develop progress as well. So the people part is clearly you're passionate about that also, but Can you give us just a little bit of a overview of how you see your role and what you enjoy and whether you do really view yourself, I'm assuming, as an engineer first versus a leader? And I know people leadership is different from mentorship. And I don't want to put words into your mouth because I suspect it's the mentorship that you really, really enjoy.
No, exactly.
But yeah, I was just interested in that. I find that quite interesting, that dynamic generally.
Well, at the end, in NIO, we have decided to split this the role, right? And so as a chief engineer, I have full responsibility on the technologies, from scouting it all the way to launching, and participate to building these loops, technology loop recipes, and so on. But of course, you don't do that in isolation. So having built good relationship with the people that I hired or I contribute to hire, and building this trust and building this level of, well, no, it's friendship, of course, not with everybody, but you know what I mean. And it helps because now we understand each other and we cooperate, not because of authority, but because of we converge pretty quickly into the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the part of working with people that I like the most. When you have a responsibility, you have, of course, also the sometimes boring part, but but also the maybe a bit egoistic, but the challenging part, right? Mm. Because then, that part, of course.
So you're like the grandparent or the uncle. So you get all the good bits with the
team. Exactly.
And you see the interesting, exciting developments and help them with those parts. But they don't phone you when you're sick.
kind of.
You can like that a bit out, Matt.
I don't like that.
And what else? I remember 7 or 8 years ago being here, in the other building. And at that time, I think the only concept vehicle we had was Eve. I think that's all we'd seen at that time. And then the EP9 was obviously the vehicle concept that we're looking at. But you were talking about the difference between the way the Chinese market are embracing AD and, I guess, understanding how the vehicle can, the functionality of the vehicle can benefit their lifestyle, I guess.
Yes.
And Eve talked about a living space and time back. Yes. I wonder, although that was 7-8 years ago, we're now 7 or 8 years later, and now you're almost going, I wouldn't say quite full circle, but some of the language and some of the description of that almost feels like there is some potential convergence of Eve to where we're going.
It's happening, yes. In the Chinese market, if we could bring Eve, I think would be a tremendous success.
Yeah.
Because the way they use the car is exactly that one.
Yeah.
It's a living room. Mm-hmm. They want to watch movies. They want to go camping with the car. They want to literally sleep in the car. They want to, because that is the way the society works there. I mean, you're in this mega city and you spend time in the car, and an electric car allow you to, keep your air conditioning on, keep your screen on, keep your audio system on. It's a gigantic, entertainment system that is constantly powered. And and that's it. So Eve definitely was something look into the future, and is happening now.
Yeah, it's quality. Yeah, I love that. That's where my mind went when you started talking about that. I just wrote some other notes. Again, looking back to that time, and you were turning around vehicles from kind of cradle to grave in 3 years, and everyone thought this cannot happen. Everyone else is 7 or 8 years to do that process. And then there was also this vision of releasing the vehicle every single year. And again, I remember talking to candidates and them saying, this can't happen, you can't do this. And I think on the NEO day, kind of most years, we were releasing the vehicle, and that was great. The interview just got me thinking these things. There's not really a question there. The last one, I love the restaurant analogy. That was really interesting. I love that. And the final question was just because also you mentioned in culture, and that was a really interesting answer. But also, I wonder if you can give us a bit of an overview of the difference in culture between the UK and China. I'm sure that there's also been challenges at times in the same way that there would have been at Chorus, as you described. And again, wouldn't expect you to give anything away that you shouldn't, but I'd just be interested in to know how that's evolved and developed, and hopefully, and maybe how you've overcome any of the challenges that were there.
Oh, I think, of course, I mean, there are differences in the way people behave, communicate, and so on. There are sociological differences. One of the advantage of NEO is that it's born international since day one. So this office was probably 6 months after NEO creation. We had this office and the Munich office and the San Jose office and so on. So we learn all together to work internationally. And it's not always super smooth, of course. There are moments of tension and so on. China is slightly more maybe practical, but driven by speed. So that's one of the major difference. But again, we have a line on values and methodologies and respect each other, and also at the end also roles and responsibility, right? Not to step too much over other people's territory, because that this is where the tension and the frictions are happening. But if you have clear roles and responsibility, then you build the trust by delivery. I deliver a good job, you recognize it's a good job, and then we go for the second loop and third loop and so on. So this is how we work.
Awesome, yeah. Love good. That.
Well, that's a little, maybe that's a real.